Now, some of you might be listening to this and start to think, whoa, this is powerful stuff. What if little old me starts to really do some of this stuff? What's going to happen to me? Well, I'm going to begin by telling a story of one physicist who actually began to have these kinds of realizations and as a result began to understand himself in a very different light. His name was Wolfgang Pauli. Now, Wolfgang Pauli was a very interesting guy. For those of you who don't recognize the name, he was the discoverer of a very famous principle of quantum physics called the Pauli exclusion principle. What it said was no two particles could ever be in the same state at the same time. It was the principle of exclusivity. Without exclusivity, nothing separate could arise. He saw how quantum physics, through this principle of exclusivity, allowed for the exclusivity needed for electrons in an atom so that one atom would be different from another atom, so that different atoms could combine to form molecules, chemistry, basically all the building blocks of life. We wouldn't have understood a thing about that if it hadn't been for Wolfgang Pauli's principle of exclusivity, principle of exclusion. Very famous. He got the Nobel Prize for this. But Pauli was a kind of a paradoxical guy. Now, even though he got the Nobel Prize, and even though he was a brilliant guy, there was something a little bit off about him. He was disturbed. He had bad dreams. He was psychologically depressed a lot of the time. Later, he actually began to work with the psychologist Carl Jung and became deeply interested in the psychological aspects of his view of nature. And because of that, he began to realize that all physical research, all the ideas about what to look for, when to look for, how we set up machinery and all that sort of stuff, all that is the result of psychic actions within the brains of the experimenters and theoreticians who make up these ideas. So he began to realize that the unconscious, in Jungian Freudian terms, was far more important in the creation of theories of the universe than had ever been thought before. In other words, Jung wanted to understand the technology of God. That's what he was into. So, becoming convinced that the unconscious was important, he thought, why not start with his own unconscious? So that's why he approached Carl Jung and began a study of himself through the auspices of Jungian psychology. Now, Pauli believed that all of reality, the universe, everything in it, had two aspects to it. A rational self, which seems to surface as objective reality, and something that was irrational or possibly irrational aspect. Now, scientists generally don't like irrational or irrational. It's kind of disturbing because everything should be out in the open. We like to see things we can feel with our senses. But Pauli was indicating there is no reality out there unless it's perceived. And it's the act of perception, this underlying, almost irrational, irrational reality that really got Pauli interested. He was convinced, Pauli was, that the rational was incomplete and not the whole story. Philosophers of the time, for example, Wittgenstein, believed that if one even attempts to even speak about a one world containing both matter and spirit, rationality and irrationality, the attempts to speak about such a world results in absolute silence and the closing of all doors. I may paraphrase and say, the slamming of all doors closed. It's like, we don't want to know that stuff. We don't want to talk about that stuff. Pauli's irrationalities came to light in a very interesting way. They came to light in his dreams. So let me tell you a little bit about some of his dreams, because I think they're very interesting and they tell us a lot about what we may be facing, I hope, not as maybe badly as some of Pauly's, but it gives us some idea as to where the fear of the irrationality and the fear of understanding what God is talking about and what God is about and the technology of God and the admittance to oneself that one is God in disguise, how that fear may arise, because it's that fear which holds us back. It's that fear which separates us. It's that fear which makes us feel that my way is right and your way is wrong. It's that fear which, in a sense, creates the exclusivity universe of separation that we all believe is the actual universe. But what I'm telling you, and if you understand this, we'll see that's just an illusion. So let's look at this, because I think it's important to understand a guy, a brave man, Wolfgang Pauly, who really attempted to get through that fear. What was he like? Well, first, let me tell you that he died in 1958, a very young man. He died of a, I don't know what disease. It might have been cancer, but I'm not sure. He was only in his 50s when he died. And there seems to be a lot of mystery surrounding his life as well as his death. Many people that knew him said he was one of the most difficult people you could know. He was unpleasant a lot of the time and very critical of other physicists' work or their apparent slow-wittedness. He was a very sharp guy. When somebody would present an idea to him that he thought was stupid, quote-unquote, I mean, this was the way he was. He was the epitome of the hubris of a scientist, the epitome of arrogance that you often associate with physicists or scientists or intellectuals in general. He was the epitome of that. Somebody would present an idea to him and he would say, that idea isn't even wrong. I mean, it was so bad, it isn't even wrong. That's how he'd put other scientists down who were slow-witted or whatever. He had a very quick mind, a very sharp tongue, and rumors about him persisted. It was said about him that whenever Wolfgang Pauly was visiting a town where an experiment was going on, the experiment would fail the instant Pauly arrived in town and the laboratory would close down. This had occurred so many times, according to experimenters, that they call this the Pauly effect. And if on a given day, when an experiment was being carried out, if it were to suddenly fail, they would stop and ask, was Pauly visiting their town today? In other words, anytime an experiment failed, it must be because Pauly's here. So it's not surprising. I mean, there's this brilliant mind who has a kind of a shamanic influence on all of reality. And here's this guy now with bravery attempting to find out this underlying irrational side to his own nature, which he's going to find out through dreams. This was his alchemical investigation into the nature of reality. Now, a Finnish physicist whose name is Laurikainen provided a series of studies about his alchemical views and wrote a series of books about them. Pauly actually wrote a series of letters in these books where he was corresponding with a friend of his and a former research assistant whose name was Marcus Fiers. Now, Fiers had been Pauly's assistant at the Polytechnic Institute in Zurich, Switzerland, and was then a professor of theoretical physics at the University of Basel in Switzerland. Well, Pauly had written that he felt conflicted. He had written, along with Carl Jung, a book about Robert Fludd and Johannes Kepler. Johannes Kepler was the astronomer. Remember, I told you about him before, the Astronomer Royal in Germany. And Robert Fludd was a physician. And the two were very much opposites. Kepler had become the kind of the epitome of the scientist, and Fludd was the epitome of the alchemist. So in opposition to Kepler's quantitative view of the universe, Fludd had seen it in an alchemical, mystical way.